It's Tuesday, March 12th. The gangs made a demand and the government said, okay, we start here. With Haiti descending into chaos, the leader of the country resigns.
The question now is, well, how do you unpack the gangs from the government?
As all this was about to break, the man behind this rebellion spoke exclusively with ABC News. President Biden outlined his vision. Now he's outlining his budget.
Trying to show that they are working to bring down cost of everyday things for average Americans.
What numbers can tell us about his campaign battle plan? And does the princess have something up her sleeve? It's tough to tell when it's been cut out of the picture.
The whole point of this photograph was to try to quell speculation about Kate's health, and it's done exactly the opposite.
How an edited photo of Kate Middleton has fueled full-blown conspiracy theories. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. When you hear the phrase failed state, you might think of Syria or Libya, states where, because of war or poverty or both, the government has virtually disappeared. And think about everything that comes with that. When your government's gone, that usually means banks shut down, businesses lose investment, jobs leave the country. If you do somehow have some money, look out, because there are no more police. Instead, just fiefdoms and strongmen around the country. Public services and roads become unusable. You can't transport goods or even food. Eventually, as all of this mounts, you get a refugee crisis as desperate civilians flee the country. Well, just a couple hours southeast of Florida, the country of Haiti has been watching this nightmare play out for years.
A huge earthquake, magnitude 7.0, just off the coast of Haiti.
The president of Haiti has been assassinated.
Natural disasters, corrupt officials, and poverty have led to the slow dismantling of the government. It is effectively a failed state. This week, this all culminated with armed men attacking government buildings. Many of these assailants are gang members, but together they become a sort of rebel army unto themselves, demanding the prime minister resign. Well, overnight, threatening more violence, they got what they wanted. ABC's foreign correspondent Matt Rivers has been following all this. In fact, he's been speaking to the leader of this gang that's effectively become a general. Matt, what has just happened?
Yeah, I mean, really, even going back the last 2 weeks, Brad, it has been a stunningly violent, stunningly consequential couple of weeks in Haitian history. What we've seen is what you just laid out there. You know, two of Haiti's most powerful gang alliances, really the only two powerful gang alliances, coming together to unify to start to attack the government. We've seen them attack prisons. They've let out thousands of prisoners. The National Palace, the Interior Ministry, looting, burning, destroying dozens of police stations around the country, all with the goal of toppling the government of acting Prime Minister Ariel Henry. And when I spoke to one of those gang leaders, he said, look, our goal is the resignation of Ariel Henry. But Henry, for a while, did not resign. And it led to a lot of speculation that he wasn't going to resign. People were watching what was going on. International pressure was building. Clearly, the demand from the gangs was that Henry needed to resign, and yet he held out until last night when it was announced that Henry had finally decided to resign.
Wait, so the gangs are saying, we are going to keep attacking government buildings. We're going to keep raiding police stations and looting them for their weapons. We're going to keep doing all this unless you give us what we want. And the prime minister says, okay, I'm out of here?
Not right away, but essentially that is what happened. And we should add that it's not just the gangs that wanted him out. He is a nearly universally loathed figure in Haiti. Ordinary Haitians really do not like this guy. He's become a symbol of a lot of the chaos that we've seen Haiti fall into over the past couple of years. You know, it's soaring gang violence, deepening poverty, exploding hunger, you know, an economy that just is not working for really anyone except the uber elite. And Henri turned into a symbol of that. But it was really the gangs and their actions that became an inflection point over the last couple of weeks. And it all culminated on Monday.
We're all agreed that this cannot be allowed to happen, not in our hemisphere,
a series of emergency meetings held by a group called CARICOM. It's called the Caribbean Community. It's a regional governing bloc made up of Caribbean nations. Also at these meetings were stakeholders from Haitian civil society, from Haitian political parties. We saw Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
I'm announcing today that the United States Department of Defense is doubling its approved support for the mission from $100 million to $200 million.
Representatives from Brazil, Mexico, the UN, lots of people there trying to chart a way forward, because what became clear after the last couple of weeks is that Haiti had spiraled out of control. This was no longer tenable and something needed to change. And the public pressure mounted that Henri needed to resign. And that is what happened. So in a late Monday evening press conference, the chair, the current chair of CARICOM, comes out, thanks Henri for his service, and says he has submitted his resignation.
Wow.
That's a huge moment in Haitian history. And not only that, CARICOM said that all parties involved have agreed to what's called a transitional presidential council, which essentially will be made up of seven different people within Haitian society, those people yet to be named, who will essentially act collectively as Haiti's president until elections can be had. Quick reminder for our listeners, Haiti's president, Jovenel Moïse, was assassinated in July of 2021.
Right.
That is why Ariel Henry, the acting prime minister, came to power 2.5 years ago and has been in power ever since. Now you will have this council, which will rule by majority vote, seven people on the council acting as a president. They'll appoint a new interim prime minister, which will report to the council. They'll appoint a new council of ministers, which will report to that council, with the goal of bringing new elections to Haiti as soon as possible.
Well, and you got this exclusive interview right before this kind of all spiraled into this resignation. You got an interview with the leader of this big network of gangs. Like, are they part of the government now going forward? Like, what is the role of these gangs in Haiti at this point?
That's a really interesting question, because these gangs and their actions over the last couple of weeks have led us to this point. I think it's fair to say that were it not for the violent actions taken by these gangs, that you might not be seeing Ariel Henry resigning at this point. And yet that doesn't mean that any of those people who were meeting in Jamaica, any of the CARICOM leaders, the United States, that they want gang members, that they think gang members should be a part of this government moving forward. So the question now is, well, how do you unpack the gangs from the government?
Right.
And that's a big, big question moving forward. It's a question that I actually asked the leader of this unholy alliance between gangs. It's a guy named Jimmy Cherissier, who goes by Barbecue.
There's been so much violence in Haiti over the last week, so many people killed. What is your goal in all of this?
And he said, we want Ariel Henry to resign. And then I followed up with, well, if that happens, then what happens next?
Will you continue to fight?
And he said, well, we'll have a temporary ceasefire where we will see what happens. We'll give some time for discussion and then we'll decide what we do next. So we will see if he actually has a ceasefire, if he actually calls on his soldiers to stand down. That would be a welcome relief in Port-au-Prince right now, which has been absolutely paralyzed by this violence, horrific humanitarian situation there. But the other thing I asked him is, as we move forward, if Henri resigns, if a new transitional council is put in place, which appears to be happening now, and you, Barbecue, do not like what they have to say, if you don't feel represented in the new government, well, then what will you do?
Is that a promise that you're making right now, that if Henri resigns, you will lay down your arms and tell your soldiers to do the same?
And he openly, clearly reserve the right to take up arms yet again.
Wow.
So I think we move into a new phase here in Haiti where we don't know exactly what will happen next. The hope that a ceasefire begins, that maybe we see a temporary relief for the several million people that have been affected by this violence in Haiti. But to say that there won't be any violence in the future, that all things will work out now and we'll move forward into some sort of sunny democratic future, I think it's too early to say.
That's wild, though, because if the whole idea was this government was ineffective because they just couldn't stop these gangs from running roughshod over the entire country. Well, now, do you really think they're going to give up their veto power just because this one guy resigns? Or do they view themselves as now just running the country? Matt Rivers, following this breaking news overnight, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, how is Congress going to react to this year's Biden budget when they haven't even agreed on last year's? We're back in a bit. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November, and while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Yesterday, President Biden released his proposed budget for next year. And this happens every year, right? The president sends this over to Congress, and like clockwork, no one does anything with it. Think about it. Republicans control the House. This isn't going anywhere. But what it does do is tell us what the president's priorities are, what he would do for the next year if he had a magic wand. And since this is an election year, it kind of puts the magic wand in American voters' hands as they consider these proposals and the man behind them. ABC News White House correspondent Karen Travers is with us right now. Karen, what is in this budget proposal, first of all?
Brad, the White House says that this budget is delivering on the agenda that the president laid out last week in that State of the Union address. And he's really leaning in on his effort to focus on the middle class, to focus on middle class Americans, because it's the general election season. And that is a key constituency for them, a voting group that they want to show that they are getting the job done.
Because when the middle class does well, the poor have a way up and the wealthy still do very well. They still do very well. But they got to start paying their fair share.
So a couple key highlights in this. The budget proposal will, according to the White House, lower cost for families. They're focused on protecting and strengthening Social Security and Medicare. And also, they say it will reduce the deficit by about $3 trillion over 10 years. They're going to do that primarily through adjustments to the tax code and cutting out what they call wasteful subsidies. Shalonda Young is the White House budget director, and she spoke to reporters yesterday.
The president's budget ensures that billionaires pay a minimum 25% rate, makes large corporations pay their fair share, cracks down on corporate profit shifting, and cuts taxes for tens of millions of low and middle income families.
Some of the other things that the president is going to be highlighting now from this budget proposal include expanding the child tax credit, lowering the cost of prescription drugs, expanding access to childcare, universal preschool, paid family leave. All of these things are things that poll very well. Americans say they'd like to see enacted. They cost a lot of money, and they also are likely to go nowhere in this Congress in an election season. But the big focus for the White House is trying to show that they are working to bring down cost of everyday things for average Americans.
Yeah, it's interesting, Karen, because we keep seeing these polls showing that Americans think, by and large, that the economy is doing terribly, mm-hmm. even with economists who are like, yeah, I don't know. This seems almost as good as it can get, considering the circumstances. Does this give us like a blueprint as to how Biden will try to frame America's finances then in sort of campaign season?
Yeah, because a lot of this, Brad, is looking back at, you know, proposals in this budget are going to sound very familiar because they're building on previous policies from the administration, things that they have already tried to get done or from legislation that's already passed that they're trying to expand. So like the child tax credit and trying to do more on prescription drugs. You see that there's that $2,000 out-of-pocket prescription cap for seniors, the $35 insulin cap for seniors. The president's proposing that that should be for everybody.
I'm doing everything I can to lower the health care costs to provide peace with people with peace of mind. Not at the expense of doctors or medicine or hospitals or drug companies, but just to make it fair.
Again, that costs money. Congress needs to act on that. But Brad, you know, really, this budget reflects the priorities of the president. As he hits the campaign trail, he was talking about this yesterday in New Hampshire. He is traveling to Wisconsin and Michigan this week, and they're going to say, look, this is what we're trying to do. This is what we want Congress to actually move forward on. And they won't, but he can say, this is what we're trying to get done and deliver for you.
Well, yeah, and you already kind of hinted at it. Republicans will basically say this costs way too much money considering what the deficits are right now. I mean, So not a chance, right? You're saying there's not a chance.
Budget proposals are wish lists for any administration, even if you have your party controlling the House and Senate, because they like to do things their way. So they take this budget proposal from the White House and they say, thank you so much for your suggestions. Now we're going to do the budget and we're going to figure out how to fund all of the agencies with the priorities that we'd like to lay out. So, you know, ultimately it's Congress that sets the budget. But here's another important thing to think about here. This is the fiscal year 2025 budget. Lawmakers are still working to fund several key agencies through this current fiscal year, 2024.
Right.
So it is very unlikely that this budget proposal passes as is, just because that's how it usually works. But they're also still so far behind on the work that they're supposed to be doing. It's kind of ironic that the president is plowing ahead and giving them another budget proposal when they're still dealing with the last one.
Right. The reason we keep talking about potential government shutdowns is because, oh, yeah, we still haven't ironed all this out. All right. Karen Travers in Washington. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
You might have seen this photo over the last couple days of members of the British royal family. It came out on Sunday, which in Britain was Mother's Day. And so in this photo, you got Princess Kate Middleton with her children, Charlotte, Louis, and George, the future king. It's very cute. Everyone's smiling. Lovely family. Allegedly, Prince William himself took the photo. But if you look more closely, there are some really weird things happening here. Little things, like part of Princess Charlotte's sweater sleeve just seems to be missing, almost like it was replaced with the pattern from her skirt. Well, shortly after its release, news outlets said this photo appeared to be doctored. Kensington Palace withdrew the image, and yesterday, Kate came out and admitted she had photoshopped her family picture, which people edit images of themselves all the time. But not the British royal family, and especially not right now, when there are lots of concerns and even conspiracy theories about Princess Kate and her comeback from a still unspecified surgery. ABC's foreign correspondent James Longman is in London right now. James, this became like a full-fledged scandal in the UK. What is happening with the princess there?
Almost immediately, as soon as it hit the internet, there were huge questions about it. Because the thing to remember here is the context in all this. She hasn't really been seen since January when she went in for this surgery. In fact, she hasn't been seen since Christmas. She went in for that surgery in January. And the questions were there right from the beginning. Why was she going in for such a long period of time for her recovery? Why was the information about her released on the same day as the King's prostate announcement? So the point is with this picture is that there have been so many questions from the very beginning. People have been looking for conspiracy, and they're finding it with this picture. There are a lot of issues with it. First of all, the sleeve, this is the biggest issue on Princess Charlotte. Charlotte's hair seems rather strange. It seems feathered away somehow. The zipper on her jacket seems just to stop completely suddenly, as though it's a separate image that's been placed on top. A big, big question, actually, Brad, which wasn't explained by Kate when she gave this statement saying that she had edited it. There's no ring on her finger.
James, you sound crazy right now, James, describing all this. But it is true. One after the other, these things just kept adding up. But why? Like, why would you do this?
Yeah. And I think the thing is that the whole point of this photograph was to try to quell speculation about Kate's health. And it's done exactly the opposite. Even her explanation: I'm an amateur photographer. I occasionally experiment with editing. I wanted to express my apologies for any confusion the family photograph we shared yesterday caused, she said. But, you know, the metadata, We understand it's been taken on a Canon camera. If that's the case, then are we expected to believe that William took this photograph of his wife and children on a Canon, sent her the image, which she edited twice, according to the metadata, before then sharing it on Sunday morning? It's just odd. Right? It's just all strange. Why did they announce her surgery on the same day that they announced that the king had an issue with his prostate. And it's this idea that we're not being told the whole story. And obviously, a lack of information allows conspiracies to fill the void.
Yeah, and I should say, we have a visual verification team. They haven't authenticated the metadata you were referencing. But I got to imagine, the next question from conspiracy theorists now becomes, was this actually Kate, in her sick time, her recovery time, experimenting with Adobe? Like, is that really what we're supposed to believe? Or could this be the work of palace officials? I'm still wondering, James, though, like, why does the country care so much? Like, why is this not just, you know, a Mother's Day embarrassment?
Just about everything to do with Kate or William over the last few weeks has been fraught with either conspiracy or controversy or mismanagement. William, for instance, had an engagement to go to his godfather's memorial service, had to pull out for, quote, personal reasons. We were told it had nothing to do with Kate. I mean, it's just been one thing after another. So whilst the palace has been clear in one respect, she had abdominal surgery, she's recovering, you'll see her in Easter, there's so much else going on swirling around it that it's just adding layers to this whole story. And I think it's important because we're talking about one of Britain's most important institutions, the monarchy. And it's about trust. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of a major news agency issuing a kill notice about an image of a future Queen of England. And that is what they've done over this particular image. The king is unwell. Are we to believe every time the palace issues statements about the king's health that they're telling us the whole truth? That's why this matters. And so, yes, it's a silly story about a photograph in one respect, but I think it's a larger issue here about what we're told about our public institutions.
And I'll never forget the moment that you emailed being like, guys, I swear, like, I'm not just up in my basement looking at this photo, but this looks weird. This, there might be a story here. James Longman, fascinating stuff. Thank you so much.
See ya.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, every nap you take, every plate you break, I'll be watching you. Gosh, I hope that's not the Airbnb host anthem. One last thing is next.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
And one last thing. I love a good Airbnb listing. Love taking a trip to a cottage upstate. Love grilling on someone else's deck that I don't have to do maintenance on. And perhaps because of this, I see a lot of videos on TikTok like this one.
There's a SIM card in there. What is this? What are you?
This video has been viewed over a million times, and it's one of many, many guests to claim they found hidden cameras in their rental rooms.
Police say this couple had no idea they were being secretly recorded in their Airbnb rental, a camera hidden inside a smoke detector looking down on their bed.
Now, this sort of thing's always been banned by Airbnb. They don't allow any cameras in bedrooms or bathrooms. They don't allow hidden cameras at all. In many states, it's already illegal to record someone without their knowledge. But now, Airbnb is going a step further. It's banning the use of any security cameras anywhere inside the house. In a policy change yesterday, Airbnb said hosts will no longer be allowed to record their guests indoors. Up until now, they had been able to put clearly labeled cameras in common spaces, like hallways and living rooms. No more. Hosts have until April 30th to take them down. Which, on one hand, you can imagine some hosts are protective of their homes and want to know what's happening there. Some explicitly tell guests you're not allowed to have parties here. Well, how do you accuse someone of partying or damaging your property without proof? Airbnb says hosts may still use security cameras outside so they can see who's coming in and going out. Guests still have to be alerted that there are cameras on the premises. Airbnb says this should only affect a tiny fraction of hosts. Not that many use cameras.
You should feel like you're comfortable when you rent in an Airbnb or a hotel or whatever it may be, that you're not being watched in the process.
This is where some guests say there's a problem here. Sure, only a tiny amount of hosts admit to having cameras, they say, but how would you even know about the hidden ones? Well, Airbnb says it takes customer safety very seriously and immediately kicks violators off the site. Some guests in the past have been described being met with blanket statements like, well, you consented to cameras in common spaces, we alerted you on the app, even when the guest has found a hidden camera in the house. This policy, just no cameras at all, seems much simpler. Perhaps it speaks to a more basic concern about the sharing economy. When you're using something owned by a stranger, it's tough for a customer, let alone a third party, a website somewhere, to demonstrate a ton of control. In the meantime, if you notice a bluish glint coming from that fire alarm above you, maybe take a close-up photo, just in case someone's staring back at you. I'm telling you, I've now seen a ton of terrifying videos being like, so here's how you spot a camera in the alarm clock, here's a camera in an electrical outlet, oh, here's one like behind a bathroom mirror. Terrifying. Then the TikToker's like, by the way, I just set this up at my own house. This is a hypothetical just to show you. I'm like, oh, so you're just scaring me on purpose. Like, sometimes I wonder if we're more obsessed with the idea of cameras being there than actually having cameras all over the place. But lots of very serious claims being made, just not always the ones on social media. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.